It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast as we cover the latest property news. We do it for you every morning and you'll hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as Amazon. And this morning, once again, we are off to Sydney to catch up with Margaret Lomas from Destiny Financial Solutions. You know, this year, Margaret, it is sort of flying by, isn't it? May not too far away now.
Yeah, well, look, I say that every year, that each subsequent year goes faster than the last. And I think it's, for me, it's a function of getting older. So, you know, when you've got less time left on the earth than you've lived, you're watching every minute of those days. And I'd prefer not to talk about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think anybody that hits 55 plus, you start to think about the clock. And certainly over 60, people are really then starting to say, gee, how many more days have I got left on the planet?
Well, that's me because I'm 64 this year. So, yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah. Well, last time we were talking about investors coming back into the market. We didn't get an opportunity to talk about just how harder it is to borrow, particularly for first-time buyers. If you look at last year, of course, the parameter was moving, the goalposts were moving. It's made a little bit more difficult with the investors coming in to the market. Just how hard is that for first-time buyers competing?
I'm not sure that it's as much about competition as it is about the lending criteria and now what you need to be able to buy a property. So, you know, we've seen property prices go up and we've seen even the cheapest end of the market in our capital cities, somewhere around the 450 to 500,000. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I like to speak empirically because we do work with investors. So we see what they're feeling and doing on an everyday basis. And we used to have investors who'd call us and say, look, I want to buy a property for $350,000, there'd always be one you could buy, and some good ones in growing areas like Perth and Adelaide and some of those larger regional areas. But now if anybody calls and says, you know, 350 is my price range as an investor, we normally have to say to them, you're going to have to up that to at least 450 to 500. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to find anything for you. So that's happened very rapidly. It seems like only yesterday that we were able to move in that $300,000 range for people, and we no longer can. So what that means for first-home buyers as well is that they're now needing to have a bigger deposit. You know, for investors, if they've got their own home, they can use the equity as a deposit. They don't have to save up that deposit. But for a first-home buyer, they've got to start with a deposit. So now they're looking, especially in our bigger capital cities, at needing a deposit of probably around 150 to 200,000 as an absolute minimum. And then on top of that, because interest rates have gone up significantly and because higher interest rates then create a risk for the lender has subsequently also tightened their lending criteria and how much you're allowed to borrow. It means that you need bigger deposits and higher incomes to be able to afford the cheapest of homes. And this is what's really pricing those first-time buyers out of the market, even more so than the fact that prices have gone up, because they need those bigger deposits and it's much harder for them to save them.
Yeah, it's got that whole trickle-down effect, and just saving $100,000, Margaret, in these times that we live in, very difficult.
And you're not going to get much for if you can only save $100,000. If you're looking at living in Sydney or Melbourne, you're really talking about a unit. $100,000 is probably going to buy you, well, I mean, it's not going to buy you anything without mortgage insurance, because that's only going to give you $400,000 to $500,000. It's only going to buy you a unit with some fairly high mortgage insurance premiums. If you're in Adelaide and Perth, you'll fare a little better. But even so, you know, the prices for homes there in the far northern suburbs in Perth and those southern suburbs in Adelaide has now surpassed the $500,000 and $600,000 mark. So we are talking units really for first home buyers. It feels to me like it was when I was a first home buyer back when in my 20s. We had to start with a unit or a townhouse because we couldn't afford the housing either. I suppose it's similar, although I do appreciate that in combination with the cost of living crisis, it does feel a lot harder now than it ever did. But for investors, if we think about them, first of all, they don't have to save the deposit because if they've got a home of their own that's grown in value, they've got some equity there and they can leverage against that and essentially put together a 100% loan to buy that investment property. And on top of that, they then get what is a pretty good yield in most areas to be able to declare as additional income to the bank. So they might want to borrow, you know, $600,000. They've got their own income to support that particular loan, but they've also got the rental income to support the loan. And a lot of banks will consider those tax deductions that you get and therefore reduce the tax you pay, which adds to your income again. So in some ways, it's an easier thing for an investor to borrow the same amount as a first home buyer.
You talk about when you bought your first home back in your 20s and you started getting going on the property ladder. What you wouldn't have been able to buy back then was a tiny home. You know, there's a whole tiny home living. So I want to throw that idea because, you know, $100,000, saving $100,000, people do it and then they go, goodness, we can't get into the property market at 100K. Can we look at a tiny home? What are the options? So people start to go down this route.
Look, that's a very small part of the market who could achieve that. And let me tell you why. First of all, you need some land to put the tiny home on. People may have parents who are happy to have that tiny home in their backyard, but a lot of people don't have that. If you bought a block of land for the purposes of being able to build a house, but decided to put a tiny home on it, you're going to find many and certainly the significant proportion of councils aren't going to allow that tiny home to be erected on there without plans for a bigger home at some point in time. So you might erect the tiny home as an initial granny flat on your land, but the long-term view would need to be that you're going to eventually build a proper residential home on that block of land. And a lot of those estates have covenants as well around that. So you've bought a block of land and the covenant may not even allow you to put the tiny home on there, or it might require you to commence your building within 2 years or 3 years or whatever. And that's for the benefit of the whole community because you don't want to see a nice new land release with a whole lot of gorgeous homes and then a little what's, you know, what equates to being a little mobile home on one right in the middle of everybody else. I think, you know, people kind of take exception to that sort of thing. So you can't really set up your tiny home on a block of land and do all gorgeous gardens and, you know, chuck in the pool and just live in that tiny home forevermore. And I think the other thing to be aware of is it's cute and fun, and Facebook is certainly full of beautiful pictures of the cutest little tiny homes that people buy. But in reality, they're just not sensible. And over time, you're going to get tired, especially if you're a young person, of living in a caravan-sized property for the rest of your life. It could be a little stepping stone. But don't see it as an investment. You're not going to increase your net worth by having a tiny home. You're not going to be able to access a growing market by having a tiny home. It's just shelter for that little bit of time that you might be trying to save for your forever home or for your or to get on the property ladder legitimately.
All right, so there is Margaret's take on the tiny homes. Well, let's segue from there into some of these areas, Margaret, that have passed their peak. They've hit the top of the market, some of these locations around Australia. Have you got any of those that you can mention?
I certainly can. And some of them are regional areas. And I don't want your listeners to think that this means that regional areas have passed their peak because it's very sporadic. And if you look around the country, some regional areas are still approaching their peak while others are definitely at that point where they're passing their peak. It's no surprise to anybody that most of Tasmania has finally passed its peak. It had a much longer bull run than I think anybody expected. And now it's gotten to the point where it's really flattened and it's come come down hard. So Hobart, which really went way past where it really should have for its intrinsic value, has come down pretty hard. And in behind it, you know, Launceston and Burnie both are now really moderating very sharply. And rents are also falling because they don't have quite the occupancy crisis that we have in much of the other parts of the country. We're seeing other areas like Tamworth and Toowoomba also peaked and now considered to be right at the top of their peak, which means that they could start to moderate and fall. And then places like Albury and Wodonga, which they were, people became quite interested in those areas during the pandemic. And now that interest has kind of gone away a little bit. And they're certainly getting now down toward the bottom, as is Lismore and places like Barrel and the Southern Highlands. But there is some good news because there are still plenty of areas that are really approaching their peak now. And for me, I'd rather something that's just past the bottom, but it's very difficult to ring the bell for the bottom of the property market. But we've got Brisbane and the Gold Coast still really ramping up. So if you're looking to buy as an investment or even an own home, those two areas really do represent some really good buying, to a lesser degree, the Sunshine Coast. And I know you've mentioned to me in chats that we've had Townsville, and Townsville is definitely an area that's doing quite well at the moment, despite the fact that it's in the news for the high crime rates that are there. There are certainly parts of Townsville that aren't subject to those high crime rates and are really, really lovely areas. So long as you buy in the right parts of Townsville, that can make some really good investment right now. Of course, we all know that Adelaide is still going strong. And it, you know, for the first time in my investing lifetime, Adelaide is finally having a boom, because it's always been an area that's grown a little bit every year and made a fine investment for that reason. But now it seems to be having a boom that has no foreseeable stop on it. So that's another good one. And interestingly, you talk about Mackay, but the whole of the Whitsundays is doing really well as well after a protracted period of nothing happening up there. I can attest to that because I've had a property in Airlie Beach for a very, very long time. One of my early kind of emotive buys that I held on to eventually turned it into an Airbnb, and we're absolutely killing it as an Airbnb. But now the values are following through and we're seeing some really good increases in value around the Airlie Beach and Cannonvale area, and down into Mackay and those areas that seem to be really doing quite well at the moment. Just keep in mind, when you do buy in those kinds of areas, you'll get a boom, but then you will have longer periods of flattening and no growth for a long time. So you've got to be getting a pretty good yield on them to make that transaction a really worthwhile one.
All right, we'll leave it there, Margaret. There's a ton of information for people to take away, even the tiny homers, dare I say it. You know, I have spoken.
They're very cute.
Yeah, I have spoken to the tiny homers. They will disagree with you, the ones that are doing it, because they seem to just love what they do, living in the tiny home. Although I have to say, the toilet is probably my problem area.
And are they young people though, or are they older people?
Yeah, funnily enough, the last person we had on, she came out of a divorce, and as you know, women really get impacted in terms of the equity imbalance. Mm. And she ended up in a tiny home, and she downgraded. She had a big home, the family home, and she seems to be loving it. So I guess, you know, different courses for different people.
I can see that, and I can see the attraction in after you've had a big family home and a family and a lot of stuff, going really, really minimal. But I think as an option for first-time buyers trying to get on the property ladder, it's not going to help them to move ahead by getting into a tiny home. Yep. You know, downsizes, people getting divorced and people moving closer to retirement, totally get that. But if you're wanting to build wealth and start that with your own property, I just don't think tiny homes offer even the tiniest step on the property ladder.
Indeed. All right. Well, food for thought there, Margaret, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds great.
We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia, The Real Estate Podcast.